Hi everyone, it's nice to meet you all. My name is Donvin, and I'm also a member of the events team at Givology. Maya and I will be moderating the event today. To set the agenda, I'll first give a brief overview of Givology. Maya will introduce our esteemed guest speaker, Andrew Kay, founder of the World Literacy Foundation, and then we'll have a fireside chat about the foundation's inspiring work and impact. As background about us, Givology is a 100% volunteer-run online giving marketplace that raises funding and awareness for grassroots education projects and student scholarships. We believe that quality education should be accessible to all students, and that small dollars and small hours can aggregate into a powerful force of change. Both Maya and I are high school students, and we joined Givology because education means a lot to us as a cornerstone in both our academic and career pursuits. Beyond our small grants, from school lunch programs in Guatemala to energy-efficient labs in Benin, we care a lot about inspiring volunteerism and actions through stories of changemakers.
Indeed, that's exactly why we are here today. We are so excited to host Givology's first live podcast recording featuring Andrew Kay, founder of the World Literacy Foundation. We are so honored to have Andrew join us. I'll now introduce Andrew. Andrew Kay is the CEO and founder of the World Literacy Foundation, which has an ambitious target of eradicating illiteracy by 2040 through a series of innovative projects and solutions. The foundation believes that every young individual, regardless of geography, should have the opportunity to acquire reading skills to reach their potential to succeed in school and beyond. As a 30-year veteran in the nonprofit industry, Andrew is recognized as an innovative leader who creates meaningful and effective outcomes. An entrepreneur and innovator at heart, Andrew started his first community project at 16. Today, he lives in Melbourne, Australia, with his family, and he, in his free time, enjoys skiing, surfing, reading, and the outdoors.
Great. Before we delve into content, we want to remind everyone to please mute themselves as we are recording today's live podcast session. We have multiple people who can't join today's live session, but we'll be downloading this podcast episode on our iTunes and Spotify stations afterward. So please, let's keep background noise to a minimum. When we're ready to take audience questions at the end, please use the raise hand function and we'll call on you that way. It's so wonderful to have you join us, Andrew. I'll start with the first question. After reading about your organization's work, I learned that the World Literacy Foundation donated over 91,000 books, reaching over 9.5 million people to date. Tell me your story on how literacy became an issue that you care so deeply about, and what inspired you to create the World Literacy Foundation?
Sure, no, thanks for that. And firstly, just a big thanks to all of you. I really have been looking forward to this opportunity. Thanks for the wonderful work that you do, and thank you for the invitation. As you probably figure out, I'm in a different time zone. It's actually morning behind me, and I'd love to tell you that my blue face was from a surfing accident, and it wasn't a bar fight. I actually had some skin cancer just removed under my eye on Monday, and it looks pretty bruised and battered, but I'm feeling all fine. For me, establishing the World Literacy Foundation was predominantly my lived experience. My grandfather, who was a farmer in Tasmania, only had school for 2 years in his life, and as a child growing up with him, I realized he was unable to read. When we'd sit down together and I'd open up a book, he wasn't able to read it. So he'd sort of pointed the pictures. And that was sort of really my first, as a 10-year-old, sort of had this awareness of the situation with my grandfather. Then fast forward sort of 30 or so years, my eldest son, Trent, he sort of went through the school system here in Australia and had learning difficulties, and he finished up school with very low level literacy skills, not as much of the failure of the school system, but there are other things sort of going on. And that really grabbed my attention to try and help Trent find solutions to navigate through life with very basic sort of literacy skills. So were the two lived experience things that sort of, led me to establishing the organisation. Then sort of fast forward another few years, I did a lot of travel around Africa in the early stages of my career. And as I visited different schools, it was a common theme. Every school that I went to, the classroom was just void of books. And really, I knew, you know, how would kids have any chance of learning with no access to books? And then an opportunity developed to establish the organisation, and that was really the birth of the World Literacy Foundation.
That sounds amazing. How does the World Literacy Foundation measure the impact of your project, programs, and initiatives?
Yeah. Fundamentally, we're really about measuring children's acquisition, acquirement of foundational literacy skills. We want to know and measure that kids are actually improving in their foundational literacy skills. We also look at like attitudinal and behavioural changes towards reading and their reading habits, and that's a measurable component as well. Measurement of the access of books. If it's pretty hard to grow in your foundational literacy skills if you have no access to books, so that's a measurement for us as well. And a big one is we're really wanting to see children discover that joy of reading and witness that change, that transformational change around as children's through learning to read, discover imagination, curiosity, and really have a hunger to learn and to gain knowledge and read more books. And that's a very powerful thing. So we would measure that as well.
That's great to hear. You were started back in 2004, so this year marks your 20th anniversary. So congratulations. Looking back, what are some of the things that the World Literacy Foundation has accomplished that you're proud of?
I think firstly, like lifting the profile of literacy globally, that's been a thing. There are many social issues and things out there in the wider space, but really sometimes the issue of literacy has fallen through the cracks. So it's starting those conversations. Very proud of breeding collaboration and fostering, you know, community connection. I think if we're really going to make a difference, it's going to take the whole community. As you probably, if you've looked into the organisation, you see we're very rooted in the community. So, you know, providing a platform for people in the community to be an advocate and a voice for literacy. So it's raising up people to speak out and engage and highlight some of those needs there, particularly like, as you may be aware, like in like underserved communities, both in America and other parts of the world, like the ownership of book that is of books by children in those communities is very low. Only about 30% of children in those books, 30% of children in those community own books. So it's extremely low. So it's really providing people to sort of turn up the volume, amplify the volume around some of these quite staggering statistics, you know, that we know in these underserved communities, up to 70%+ of children, you know, struggle to read at a very basic level. And the consequences of them going into their adult life with low-level literacy or being illiterate has, you know, horrendous consequences for their life. Yeah. I think also proudly as an organisation, in the way that we've utilised technology and integrated the use of technology in innovation, artificial intelligence to be a solution in particularly in classrooms in Africa where they have limited to no books. So we've sort of done a number of innovations really to use 21st century technology, sort of to bridge that literacy gap as well. So they would be the main accomplishments, yeah, most proud of.
Speaking of solutions, in what ways does the World Literacy Foundation collaborate with other organizations or communities to address literacy challenges globally?
Yeah. So I think it's sort of in three parts there. It's both globally, nationally, and locally. I think globally, the centerpiece is the World Literacy Summit, which is at Oxford University, that we do every 2 years. There is no other like international event that brings together all people working in the sector, be it in academia, like people running projects at a regional, local, or national level, people with using technology. And it fosters collaboration, networking, sharing of learned experience and ideas. So for that, it has been important to bring a sense of oneness and community to the broader people working in the sector globally. Nationally, we work a lot with governments, both technology partners, and organizations. So and then a local sort of community level. I'm not sure if you've sort of looked at our youth ambassador program. So over the years we've had literally thousands of young people from 110 different countries who have done sort of like an internship with us and been a youth ambassador in their local community and provided them that voice and platform to both be an advocate in their community, run some projects, generate ideas. So that's been very effective for us in at a local level across communities across the world.
It was great to hear that you're empowering the youth through this ambassador program. And the World Literacy Foundation has projects across the globe, including the United States, Africa, and Australia. What key initiatives and programs is the foundation currently involved in?
Yeah, so for example, in the United States, we have an initiative which is called USA Reads. So if you go to just usareads.org, you'll see more about it, but it's predominantly providing books to underserved communities in the United States. I guess the statistics, tell us the highest rates of illiteracy are a postcode, or you say postcode, you would say zip code driven. So it's in these underserved communities where often these children aren't going to public libraries. So we would provide books to food bank organisations and other sort of services to try and get, books into the hands of children that haven't discovered that joy of reading, to try and encourage them to start a habit and a love of reading regularly. And part of it is really just access to books. So that's sort of through predominantly through the United States. In Africa, our main initiative is, it's called Some Books, and it's in Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, and South Africa. And it's predominantly using a low-cost tablet device. The preloaded books are on that device, actually 750 books. And regardless of internet or electricity, those books can be used and accessed in a classroom. In Australia, we have a large Indigenous population, and that Indigenous population often lives in remote communities, and their local languages, of which there are 100 Indigenous languages, are spoken by the children in those communities, not English. And really the first introduction to English to those children is when they start school. So we've produced these bilingual digital books, which are both in their local language and English, really to help them you know, make that adjustment to learn English right from a very early stage. And sort of globally, at the moment, we're developing a technology item. It's called the Literacy Pen, and it's basically a digital pen device where you can speak into the device and a word or a sentence, and then on that device it would display that word or sentence. And we're trialing that device in Nigeria, where it has a very high rate of adult members of the population who are illiterate, and it's giving them some basic sort of tools that that they can sort of navigate through being either totally illiterate or low-level literacy skills. So there's some exciting things sort of coming through. And then obviously next year is the World Literacy Summit in April, back in Oxford. So that's another thing we're sort of involved with at the moment, sort of planning for next year.
Speaking of your project, Sumbooks, I read about it before and I took particular interest in it because you combined the facets of education and sustainable technology. So I was wondering if you could elaborate more on that experience.
Sure. So Sub-Sahara Africa has some of the highest literacy rates in the world. You go to any classroom outside of a capital city and it just lacks basic sort of educational resources and books. Most of the classrooms don't have internet access or electricity. So the Sumbooks basically is a 10-inch tablet device where it uses solar to charge and it preloads content on the device. So regardless of internet connection or not, there's access to a library of 750 books. Now, some of those books are local language books. Some of them are national books, and some of them are international books. And there's some teaching tools there, some digital games, and a variety of other things. So I guess in a school in a remote area that has no books, no library, a Sumbook device brings into that classroom a library of 750 books. And for most of the communities that we're working in, children have never touched anything digital before, and they have a real appetite to learn and play with it, where maybe for us, apart from our phones, we sort of push away from digital. So the internet isn't coming anytime fast to these communities. So it's not the ideal situation. As soon as these communities become online, they can be, you know, connected to the world through the web and have better access to content. But at the moment, the reality is, you know, a huge percentage of those communities have no access. And this is our focus, really. We see it sort of a neglected community in the sub-Sahara area. It's been overlooked. Capital cities, not too bad, but once you sort of move out of those capital cities, very much overlooked. So that's really Sumbooks, yeah.
It's great to hear about everything you're doing with Sumbooks. Looking back into the past 5 years ago, how did the pandemic affect the World Literacy Foundation and how did the organization adapt?
Yeah, I think in a positive way, it really fast-tracked us and pushed us down this path of developing online solutions and technology. So it also opened the door for us to have a more global workforce. Previous to the pandemic, we were very Australian-centric in our workforce. Coming out of the pandemic, our workforce is split across nearly probably 14 different countries. So we're working remotely as a team. So that's in a positive sense how the pandemic through and post-pandemic affected us as an organization. I think there's still, post-pandemic, there's still many challenges, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. Schools over there were closed for 2 years. So the end result is that children didn't progress to the next class level through those 2 years. So, and then there was another cohort this year of, you know, grade one students starting. So in some classes, there's nearly 200 students in a classroom because of the pandemic. And that's, that sort of impact is going to be generational. There's sort of no sort of quick fix. And it's really quite a challenge to many of the countries, like in the sub-Sahara area, just, you know, a total absence. We did, in the communities that we're working with, run community-based education through the pandemic. And then we, once schools opened up, then we moved back into the schools. But it's like a significant problem globally for those that, you know, missed 2 years of school. Many of them never came back as well. So a lot just sort of left the school system at a very young age.
Looking forward into the future, you mentioned your goal to eradicate illiteracy by 2040. What are some of your plans for the future to reach this goal?
Yeah. Certainly, collective action and community momentum is critical, and it's, you know, empowering people, giving them a voice. So it's sort of that shared responsibility. It's not looking just completely at us. And I think the Youth Ambassador Program is an example of that. We're raising up, you know, voices of young people and giving them that platform, that chance to be a partner with us. So creating that education and awareness, particularly within the local communities, highlighting needs is important. Like globally, like we produce a report every few years, and it's called the Economic Cost and Social Impact of Illiteracy. So it's using economics really to highlight the various financial impacts of a person going through and finishing the school system that has low-level literacy skills or is completely illiterate. And that tends to be a document that governments take attention to them. There's another organisation that has done some research around, you know, $1 spent on early literacy intervention returns $13, you know, back to the community. So it makes just good economic sense to invest in literacy early on. So these sort of campaigns tend to all play into a target of, you know, that awareness, be it government, be it community. So it's very much a collective viewpoint. We have a body within the organisation. It's called a task force, but they, every year in September at the United Nations General Assembly, they facilitate up there, and part of that group also is amplifying this message when, you know, world leaders come to New York for the General Assembly, just to ensure that that message isn't missed. So it's happening, yeah, in a number of different ways.
How does the World Literacy Foundation advocate for policy changes in literacy education at the global, national, and local level?
Yeah. Well, I think the task force at a very much at a global level, as I just mentioned, the World Literacy Summit is also another tool. We do, through like media, we do a variety of, and we have like coverage on the media quite regularly, and that tends to be a factor in highlighting need and policy change. And then it's really just through you know, people like you and me, just us, you know, been out there, you know, to speak out, to roll up our sleeves, to talk about it. You know, most people wouldn't realize that, say, in the United States, you know, 24 million people, you know, struggle to read. So it's, you know, it's a big number. And it's the same problem in Australia, you know. So it's sort of, you know, speaking out, reminding, talking about that lived experience of people that have overcome and gained literacy skills later in life in, you know, prisons in the United States, juvenile prisons in the United States. You know, 70% of the young people in prisons are illiterate. You know, it's having those discussions that really you can try and influence policymakers and governments, you know, to look at it more seriously. And, you know, and I think it's very important in, you know, partnering with the local community. And I think one of the things I'm really proud about an organisation like ours is we're not riddled with bureaucracy, which often governments are. We're small, we're nimble. You know, there's very little red tape. And we can respond quite quickly and easily to needs out there. And I think that's a unique attribute, really, to have, you know, real and sustained impact in this area.
I noticed that you have a Get Involved section under the foundation's website. Could you explain how individuals or organizations get involved with or support the World Literacy Foundation's missions and initiatives? Or do you have any advice for listeners on this podcast on how to create a meaningful impact?
Yeah, no, fantastic. This is my favorite question. yeah, look, all of us can play a role and make a difference. And particularly, look, if you look down through history, with these sort of type of issues, often it's the voice of young people that tend to be the biggest factor and influence. And at a local level, it can be through, you know, even your social media posts, your discussions with friends and family. As you get, you know, more involved and more connected, you know, you may have a rich uncle that, you know, serves as a trustee on a foundation, or a family member that is involved in some sort of business. And, you know, often it's when you mention to them about the work that we do, then that puts us, you know, front of mind. Then at a very, you know, practical level, there's like numerous sort of volunteering opportunities. Like it could be, you know, book drives. We run this program where we set up pop-up libraries in laundromats. We know that people who use laundromats often are living well below the poverty line, and they don't have a washing machine at home, and they're often single parents, and they take their kids down to the laundromats to do their washing once a week. And the evidence sort of tells us they don't have a single child's book at home. So we set up these little libraries of secondhand books in laundromats where kids can just grab them and take them home. You know, that's something that, you know, identifying a laundromat, you know, in your network, in your community, is a very practical way that you can get involved. In kind professional services, you know, you may be skilled in this area or that area. Your networks are fantastic, of other people that you know that have, you know, professional skills that can volunteer or, you know, contribute in some type and way. And then even just like often organising a simple like fundraising event and community awareness event in your local community. You know, sometimes it could be around sort of World Book Day or International Literacy Day. It could be at the office, it could be at home, it could be at college. But again, it just provides a trigger, an opportunity to have these conversations and really, highlight to people that there are, great numbers of children who become young people and go into adulthood with very low level literacy skills. And it's one critical thing to allow them to reach their full potential is, building those foundational literacy skills in their early years. So all of those things are like fantastic ways that, you and others can get involved. And certainly if you want to do that with us, we'd welcome you with open arms. Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew, for taking part in our podcast. We've had an enlightening time learning about the creation of the World Literacy Foundation and its current projects and impacts. In the meeting, we discovered Andrew's personal story when he was 10 years old with his grandpa, the joy for learning and fostering community engagement with the World Literacy Foundation, and their goals of using Sunbook and AI in classrooms for innovation and learning, as well as the Youth Literacy Foundation program to provide a platform for individuals to advocate within their communities. Before we say goodbye, let's take a moment to reflect on what we've explored today. Andrew, are there any last words you want to end off with to the audience?
Yeah, just expressed again my gratitude and appreciation for having me on as a guest. I thank you for the work that you do, and you're, doing some amazing stuff in amplifying issues around education and supporting organisations, not with words, but in a practical way. And that's, just a wonderful thing. And Joyce and you, the whole team, just my appreciation for inviting me to be part of this today.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And with that, we'll wrap up today's first speaker event of the Givology podcast series, where we talk with changemakers of education who've brought learning to the forefront. You can check out our other podcast episodes on Spotify or SoundCloud under the Givology Impact series. If you would like to help out the World Literacy Foundation fulfill their goal of eradicating illiteracy by 2040, or would like any additional information about their organization, go to their website at worldliteracyfoundation.org. Or if you would like any information or help out Givology, you can find us at givology.org.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast/speaker event, where we talked with Andrew Kay, CEO of the World Literacy Foundation. And this is our first of a few speaker/podcast events we have planned. So I'm Nicholas Damati. I'm the co-head of Givology's events team. And we're going to be looking into planning more of these events going forward. And I look forward to seeing you guys on the next one. So stay tuned for our next podcast episode. And for anyone who's interested in joining our events team, please reach out to info@givology.org. And I guess thank you all for coming, and thank you, Andrew, for speaking. And yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Bye.